Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. There's so much going on that it's hard to choose where to start. But let's do this. We'll kick things off with domestic terrorism, move on to the latest in Iran and what's going on in Congress. Buckle up, and we'll end up at Lobstergate. First up is the synagogue attack outside Detroit. From WWJ.
This is a deeply disturbing and tragic incident, and our deepest sympathies are with the victims, their family, and the entire Jewish community. The FBI is here working with our state, local, and federal partners to investigate this incident, and I can confirm that we are leading the investigation right now as a targeted act of violence against the Jewish community. There was one subject involved in this incident who is now deceased. And as my partners have said, we've had no victim fatalities. The FBI was notified of active shooter at Temple Israel at approximately 12:45. We immediately activated and deployed all of our crisis response resources, as well as more than 100 agents and analysts to ensure that we are actively mitigating and responding to the active threat, but also pursuing diligently and methodically every lead that we have. Second, we've activated a digital media tip line for any witnesses who has photos or videos of the incident today. They can upload those at www.fbi.gov/West Bloomfield attack, all one word. But the public can also report through our call line at 1-800-CALL-FBI if you have any information about this incident and or any other suspicious activity that you see around in your community, your life, your places of worship, your schools. As the sheriff said, we all need to remain vigilant, and it takes the whole community to ensure that we remain safe.
We're joined on the WWJ Live Line by Oakland County Executive Dave Coulter. And Dave, you mentioned it earlier, the response from Oakland County and from police departments all throughout the county, exceptional. The time they took to get there, almost no time at all, and you had to be pleased with what you saw there.
Very much so. First, starting with the Bloomfield police, who were on the scene right away, leading the investigation. But then again, yes, the Sheriff's Department, numerous police departments from across the area have come there, Michigan State Police. I mean, these folks. And, you know, unfortunately, this is the third time I've watched them in operation, but I want people to know just how confident and they can be and proud of the response from our first responders.
Sorry to be talking to you in this situation, but glad to have the information that you provided. Hey, Dave, what was your reaction when you first heard about the situation?
Well, I was horrified. You know, it breaks my heart. And this is the third situation like this since I've been executive. If you think about Oxford High School and then the water park and Rochester Hills. So it just breaks my heart that this is where we are as a country. But I'm proud of the fact that our team has responded. I'm at our emergency operations center right now. We're coordinating all the response to this, and they're doing an amazing job, and we're doing everything we can to keep the synagogue and the people there in the community safe.
At this point, how does...
Prayers are always helpful. I'm a person of prayer myself, so I think that's a wonderful thing to do. But look, we're responding in all sorts of different ways. The children that were at school in the synagogue have now been moved off site. We're going to provide mental health counselors. We actually provided Parks buses to get them there. I mean, we spare no effort to try to figure out exactly how we can assist them. But right now, there'll be more details on what folks can do to help.
So, a crazed gunman opened fire on a synagogue in the suburbs outside Detroit and was shot dead by security before he could harm anyone. And as that is happening, the Democrats appear to be trying to dismantle Homeland Security. Here's Annie Fry.
Fox News reports by Alex Miller. Senate Republicans are accusing Senate Democrats of trying to rip apart the DHS piece by piece. The Department of Homeland Security, who needs that these days? Nothing going on, of course. After again blocking a bid to reopen the agency. Little has changed in the stalemate over the last 27 days of the partial shutdown, and communication breakdowns are dominating what could be opportunities for negotiation. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York and his caucus are still demanding stringent reforms to immigration and customs enforcement, while Senate Republicans are dug in against their top demands. Throughout the day, Senate Democrats tried to offer individual bills to fund pieces and parts of DHS. A fired-up Senate Majority Whip, John Barrasso, accused Senate Democrats of trying to rip the agency apart at a moment it was designed for, as the war in Iran has spurred threats of retaliation in the U.S. by sleeper cells. Barrasso said, and that's at a time when our homeland is under attack. All warning lights are flashing red, and they want to peel apart piece by piece the Department of Homeland Security, the comprehensive department of our government, to protect the American people because they want to stand with illegal immigrant criminals. It's not lost on me that when was ICE formed? After September 11th. Because we had people in our country training in our country to kill Americans in our country. So they created ICE, or the Department of Homeland Security, I should say, in a way that was supposed to protect us at home. I could see how the left would be like, oh, President Trump started this war to push us to fund DHS or to try to, you know, put the Democrats in a tight spot where they'd have to go through the funding process. TSA is day by day by day. I think tomorrow is the second paycheck that they're going to miss, the first one that they're going to miss in full. And so you do have people who are still coming to work. They'll get paid for the time that they worked whenever they decide to reopen the government. The Democrats kept the last one closed for quite some time. The shutdown lasted for, it was a record-breaking shutdown. But ICE is funded in the big, beautiful bill for, I think, 5 years. So arguing over the funding of DHS, I sent a text message to one of my congressman friends and was waiting. I haven't heard back from him yet. But Kankakee, Illinois, ravaged by a tornado, hail this bigger than the size of a grown person's hand. FEMA is right now affected by the government shutdown. Is Kankakee going to be delayed in their ability to get assistance because FEMA isn't funded? I want to know. TSA is working at a bare bones capacity because they're not funded right now because the Democrats have shut down the government, this portion of the government, over it. Somebody going to get through? Somebody going to do something terrible and get through because TSA wasn't operating at full capacity? I mean, that's the scary part of it. The lines that we're seeing, especially on the weekend, spring break is coming up. A lot of people sending their kids on trips, college kids, you know, young adults, whatever, going on spring break trips right now, waiting in security in lines that are hours and hours long. That's an inconvenience. It's a terrible inconvenience. It shouldn't have to happen. But that's not the worst thing that could happen. The capacity for something really terrible to happen because the Democrats have picked this moment to, you know, stomp their foot, put their head in the sand, say we will take this and only this, and we're not going to negotiate on anything. I'm wondering in my mind the modifications that they want to see made to ICE. One of the initial demands that they had was that they wanted ICE agents to wear cameras, and then President Trump and the Republicans were like, great idea, let's do it. I almost feel like maybe if the Democrats were going to be this ridiculous, then maybe the Republicans shouldn't give in. If they knew they were going to give in to the cameras, maybe they should have waited and made the Democrats feel like they really earned it. But they conceded right away. Yeah, cameras, let's do that. The Democrats are not, they're the politics of the moment, the will of the American people is not behind what the Democrats are doing right now. And, it, you know, a government shutdown doesn't mean anything to anyone until it actually affects you. People start traveling, it's going to affect you. But good grief, the stakes are pretty freaking high right now. If you are looking at what's going on right now in Michigan, West Bloomfield Township, Michigan, a suspect rams into a synagogue. I guess the car went ablaze. He got in a shootout with the local security there. Security won. He was badly burned. He's dead, but he opened fire. The stakes are really, really high. If the Democrats feel like this is the moment, like look at what the Democrats are willing to shut the government down over, and the Republicans in the Senate can't even take an 80-20 issue and bring the Senate to a screeching halt until the Democrats are incapable of pushing the filibuster to the extent where they're going to be able to stop the Save America Act from passing. Now, I'm sitting here criticizing the Democrats' resolve on a particular issue, but the issue I'm criticizing is one that's not popular with the American people. The Save America Act is very popular with the American people. And we're just sitting twiddling our thumbs waiting for the Republicans to, I guess, work up the effort and the initiative to push the issue enough so that it actually gets litigated, if you will, in the Senate. I don't know. You know, talking to Hans von Spakovsky in the 12 o'clock hour, I played from that clip. Chad Pergram has been very hesitant to say, like, oh, yeah, filibuster, let's go, let's see it. He's made it seem as though it's a bit more of a challenge than maybe the Mike Lees on X are suggesting that it might be, or Scott Pressler or whatever, all people who I think are incredible patriots working for the betterment of this country and election integrity. But I feel like Hans kind of softened the Chad Pergram blow a little bit, seeing it a little bit differently. And I don't know why the Republicans aren't doing this. Everyone's demanding it.
Everyone's demanding it. I would love to criticize Republicans, because Republicans have got to get their act together to start passing legislation. The filibuster is the big question. But right now, Democrats are doing nothing. I mean, their entire agenda right now is just do nothing, accomplish nothing, resist everything, simply because they think their side's going to turn out more in November if they do that. And so it's got to be Democrat voters deciding. We want, you know, you as a Democrat voter, you can look at a popular issue, whether it be SAVE Act or anything else, just any 80-20 issue that you say, yeah, you know what, I don't always align with Republicans, but I do align with them on this one. Maybe it's boys and girls sports or something like that. You have got to hold your politicians accountable as a Democrat voter and say, please get on board with this. I'm a Democrat. I support you. Please vote for this. Otherwise, they'll never do anything.
That's the domestic news. But what about how we're doing overseas? Here's Mark Reardon on the latest polling regarding Operation Fury.
David Strom is on the line from Minneapolis, associate editor with hotair.com. All right, you just posted a comment on hotair.com about, you know, some of the polling that's involved here with what I like to call Operation Epic Flurry, only because I misnumbered it there last week. No, Operation Epic Fury. So the polling is showing that a lot of people are not supporting the goals of the U.S. military or the action against Iran. So you got guys, and you included this in your piece, like Brian Stelter blasting it out there, trying to show that Trump does not have support on this. So, you know, one of the things that always comes up, and I think this was true with your situation up there with ICE, and, you know, that was only a couple of months ago, is the way the media covers this story. So obviously the polling is going to shift depending on the information that the American people are getting. So how do you kind of explain that polling right now?
Well, to me, the most striking thing about the poll, first of all, the idea that it would be normal under any other president for the public to be at about 50-50 or 45-55 on any military action. I mean, it's unprecedented, and it is entirely due to the type of coverage. I mean, there really has been, at militarily speaking, probably no prior operation out there that has been this successful this quickly. Now, I think it's perfectly legitimate for people to question whether this was the right war at the right time. But the striking thing out of that poll was about half of Americans, or actually more than half, about 60% of Americans don't understand why we're doing this. And they're implying, people like Brian Stelter are implying it's because the president hasn't explained it. And that's actually not true. I mean, we get constant explanations for why this is happening. What we don't get is the media actually, you know, summarizing that. What they do is they immediately go to Democrats who say, there's no reason why we're doing this. And they intentionally have confused what is the pretty simple thing. I mean, the president has explained it multiple times. Hegseth has explained it multiple times. We've had 50 years of conflict with Iran. And so the only reason why people are confused about this, I mean, forget whether they support it or not, but everyone ought to understand why we're doing it.
Yeah, but then you get to the way that the coverage is presented. And, you know, I've referred to this a couple of times, even with some guests earlier today, 157, 160 people die at this girls' school. Yeah. But there's nuance to all these things, because even the New York Times, as you pointed out, had to admit that the school where it is situated on a military base,
yep,
there, you know, so there could have been a miscalculation because it was a military base. We don't even know exactly if it was hit or 157 people died, because we're taking the word of the Iranian government. And by the way, I think we know for sure that the Gazans weren't very honest and Hamas wasn't very honest about what was happening. So it's hard to know the truth.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way that they report this, I mean, they've reported it from the very beginning entirely based upon what the Iranians say. Everything that they do, I mean, just put the coverage in context. You know, it's tragic that we have lost 8 service members, but, you know, the first Gulf War, one single strike, military base in Saudi Arabia, killed something, you know, between 100 and 200 Americans. And nobody looks at that war as sort of a great failure. I mean, we lost fewer than 200 people in the war compared to absolutely decimating the Iraqi military. And, you know, it was a great success. 90% of the people in America, you know, supported George Bush, you know, at the time. And now the coverage is such that anytime anything bad happens in America for Americans, it's presented as, oh my gosh, we're losing the war, when in fact, I mean, we have completely wiped out the top leadership of Iran and taken out most of their missiles, most of their drones, most of their military equipment, sank their entire navy. And I mean, it has just been overwhelmingly, in a tactical sense, successful.
Oh, beyond now successful from a military standpoint. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there's really, in the history of warfare, there really is hardly a comparison.
Speaking of media coverage, why is no one covering what's going on in Cuba? Here's the Mark Cox Show.
This whole situation with Cuba is very interesting, and not a lot of people are talking about it, or I should say not enough people are talking about it. You've heard Trump talking about it. Of course, you've heard Marco Rubio talking about it. But this really hasn't been the big talker, because understandably the focus right now is on Iran. But what's going on in Cuba is very fascinating. So with the U.S. basically blockading the Venezuelan oil from going to Cuba, it essentially cut Cuba off. Venezuela and Cuba have been, I mean, big allies since, what was the early 2000s?
Sure.
So this is a huge deal. And so Venezuela was sending oil over to Cuba, and then in exchange, Cuba was sending doctors and security personnel over to Venezuela. So it was a great partnership. So with that lifeline cut off, they can't even get some of the planes out because they don't have enough fuel to make these trips. The cars, they're just kind of abandoned in the street is what I'm looking at. They're having regular blackouts, and it seems like it's getting worse and worse and worse. Like, they're really, I mean, kind of on their last leg here is what it sounds like.
Yeah, all I can think of is I wonder who's going to get all those 57 Chevys that they've got driving around in Cuba.
Isn't that funny how that's what we all picture? That's what I picture. When I think of Cuba, I think of
cigars.
That was my next thing. I was going to say cigars. And yeah, I mean, those classic cars. In fact, I was watching an interview with one of those guys who, that's his job. He has the classic cars and he takes people around. And of course, you had big time celebrities who were going to Cuba because they wanted that experience. You know, you see the pictures of it and you're thinking, wow, I really want to take part in that. And so people would pay him good money to just drive around Cuba in one of these classic cars. And he says, well, not only are people not coming here because several countries are telling people don't go to Cuba. And then on top of that, he says gas is incredibly hard to get right now because of the shortage.
Sure.
And so it's fascinating to watch this all unfold. And Mark, you talk about this chess game that Trump is playing and the impact that, you know, what Trump did in Venezuela and Mexico, it's all having a direct impact on Cuba. In fact, here's Trump talking about Cuba recently.
Maybe a friendly takeover. It may not be a friendly takeover. It wouldn't matter because they're really they're down to, as they say, fumes. They have no energy. They have no money. They're deep trouble on a humanitarian basis. And we don't want to see that, but they were very, very bad to a lot of people.
Well, they're communists. We should point that out.
There's that.
So that is just yet another example that this socialist run political power, political system, I should say, is not effective. It doesn't work, Zohran Mamdani. And yet, here we are again. Enough people were convinced by this 30-something-year-old, not to diss on the 30-something-year-olds, because I'm in that group too, but he was able to convince enough people, yeah, that's a really good idea. Let's try that. Even though it's failed other places, it's currently failing in Cuba. Yeah, let's do that.
He led a Muslim prayer in the mayor's office yesterday. There was a video of it online this morning.
He also hosted, I forget the guy's name, but he had somebody over at the his mansion or whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Wherever he lives.
So all, for all these people, and we've made this point a number of times, who would be critical of this and say it's not in America's best interest, do any of these people understand what it's... None of them understand what it's like to live under socialism. They've just been fooled by their professors and left-wing ideologues thinking it's just such an ideal situation where everybody sits around and sings Kumbaya and I work for you and you work for me and we coexist, and it's nothing like that. It's never been anything like that. I remember a few years ago I had a guy on, and he was talking about escaping from Cuba. And do you know what the guy did to try to get to America? Let me play this this clip here, if you don't mind, here, and interrupt your piece. Listen, it'll take it a second to load up.
One day I got enough, grabbed my windsurfing equipment, went to a very isolated side of the city with a straight shot to the ocean, away from the bay, and I took off. And I remember reaching the conclusion, and this is a messed up part that if you want socialism, you should wonder about this. You wonder why I reached the conclusion that dying there would be even better than ever be back. I'd reached the conclusion that I would take the decision to put my head under the water and take 3 deep breaths of water. And I would die drowning with a big smile on my face because I knew I was free. This is the first time in my life I was free. I get picked up by the Coast Guard boat.
That guy got on a wind surfboard and escaped Cuba and decided that he would rather drown than ever go back once he was able to get out of Cuban waters on this surfboard.
I guess,
and he
everyone
finally got picked up by the Coast Guard.
I guess people in New York City did not see that.
No,
clip.
They didn't see it. No, that's not... None of them understand how torturous it is to live in that situation. And think of what we could do for Cuba. I mean, I'm not suggesting it's the next big port stop on the cruise ship system, but it would be.
Yeah.
The beautiful beaches, but first of all, the country's got to be brought back from where, I mean, it's in shambles.
Well, by the way,
it's in shambles
because of the gas shortage right now, the fuel shortage, the trash trucks aren't even going around, so you can see images of trash everywhere. It's disgusting right now. It doesn't even, what you're picturing in Cuba right now, again, with those images of these beautiful classic cars driving around and the palm trees and the beaches, doesn't look like that right now. Not the images that I've seen, not the videos I've seen. It's daily power outages that are lasting, from what I'm reading, 12 to 18 hours. Imagine that. You're being told you can't even fly out because the jets don't have enough fuel. You're being told to limit how much you even drive around because of the lack of fuel. It's a disaster.
Sure.
And the president there in Cuba has basically said, we're resisting American aggression. That was the way. Now, as far as poking our nose and trying to do all these things around the world, arguably what we have been doing is in America's best interest. I do believe that. However, we do need to be careful. And I'm not saying this in relation specifically to Cuba. I'm just making more of a generalized statement. We do have to be careful how involved we get. Is it our job to go and do these things? Ultimately, it would make things better, but is it our job? That's the question that we have to ask ourselves. How does this benefit America?
If not us, who?
But that's not always a good enough reason.
What other chance do those people have at freedom? It's what the Cuban-American community in Florida has been lobbying for and pushing for years, is to bring their country back to where it was. It's what the people that came here when the Chavez deposed have been hoping for years, because what's going on in Iran, what's going on in Cuba, what was going on in Venezuela didn't represent the will of the people. They didn't vote for that. But they were held hostage.
The question, though, of if not us, then who? I'm not sure I think that's a strong enough argument to go in and get involved. I think it's something you have to ask yourself, because maybe that is something you need to consider. The question you have to ask yourself is, how does this benefit America?
It will benefit America, but the better question is, how did we get to the situation we're in? And you touched on it a few minutes ago. We wouldn't be in this situation. We wouldn't be facing these options if not for the chess game being played by Donald Trump, who saw the opportunity to put all of these countries in a position to where freedom is once again a possibility. Mm-hmm. So Maduro's not in charge anymore. Khomeini's not in charge anymore. The Castro brothers are dead, and the guy that's running Cuba right now is out of oil. He's got no money coming in. He's been cut off from probably South Korea. I don't know if the Chinese are trying to supply him with anything. The enemies of America are the ones keeping Cuba running, if it's running at all. And we're only in this situation for one reason. That'd be my point.
Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily saying my argument relates to Cuba. I just mean in general, when we're thinking about getting involved anywhere around the world, that's the question we have to ask ourselves.
Yeah. Here's the bite I would, if I could get Mom Donnie or AOC or one of those people in a room tied to a chair, this is the soundbite I'd like to play for them. This is the other Cuban immigrant who managed to escape from Cuba. I played this bite a long time ago. It's about 39 seconds long. Listen to this guy's lived experience with socialism.
I enlisted in 2010, and I got the opportunity to serve a year in Afghanistan. I owe my life and my kids' life and the future that they can have to this nation. And that's where I went in service, to feel and be able to tell anybody that can challenge that around me that I earned it. Nobody gave me anything. I earned it. I earned my right to vote, I earned my right to speak, and I earned my right to tell you right now why socialism sucks.
Socialism sucks.
He made it to this country, he enlisted in the military, and he lived the American dream. And that's all we want to give these people the opportunity to do. We don't need President Marco Rubio in Cuba. We just need the people to have a say in how the government's run.
Now let's move on to Lobstergate, where the mainstream media was screaming about the military spending $1.3 million on lobsters. The assumption was it was a huge, fancy meal for a party or for military brass. But turns out, that's not close to the truth. Here's Bob Rose.
Can you believe it? The lefties have nothing else to talk about, so they created Lobstergate. They never bothered, you know, the same old Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, Seth Meyers, idiots on CNN and stuff. You know, the regular gang of misfits. Oh, my God. The military spending all this money on lobster dinners. Oh, my God, they're living extravagantly. And I saw the story, and I read the story, and I'm like, this will be here today and gone tomorrow. But it wasn't quite that easy because, you know, the legacy media, lefty media, whatever you want to call them, had to try to make something from this. And look, it came from a news story from noted military journalism site TMZ.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, sarcasm intended.
Bunch of libs, yeah.
About the Defense Department spending $22 million on lobster and ribeye steak in a single month. Well, anybody that knows there's a certain tradition when people are being deployed or they've been on extended deployment, mm-hmm. to have a real treat
yes.
for them is normal. And you want to talk about an improvement in morale. It is something little and nice that you can do for people that are putting their lives on the line. And I don't think the average American would begrudge them any of that. But it's these lefties. Once again, they show, basically, why don't you just say what you mean, which is you hate the military.
Mm-hmm, pretty
you
much.
Hate the military. Yeah. You don't like the military. You don't like that whole culture. You don't like that culture of discipline. You don't like that military culture.
Don't say masculinity.
Yeah. Oh. That was on the list.
Oh, can't have that.
So apparently, when you look at the active duty personnel right now, there's more than 1.3 million. That $22 million works out to under 17 bucks a head.
Wow.
Yeah. So the U.S. defense budget is around $900 billion. Okay? And if you're using just a tiny fraction of that mm-hmm. to feed the troops
yeah.
in a for a very positive thing, you know, why wouldn't you? Why would you? No normal person would begrudge them that.
No, but we're talking about American media, American politicians on the left who just have no clue.
Yeah. It's so I thought, okay, this story will come and go. But it blew up. But again, look, it shows here's the thing. We know the agenda of the left, okay? We know what it is currently. Anything that is related to Trump in any way is bad. So now, you know, of course, the military's got to be bad because they're doing a bad thing called war, of course, to save lives in the long run. But again, they refuse to look at the big picture, and they also refuse to do research. They show and prove their own level of ignorance. Yep. And before you go on popping off about something like this, wouldn't you have, and in a lot of these shows, they have a ton of people working for them. They have writers, like in Kimmel and those guys. They have a team of writers. That's their job, like 40 hours a week. They do nothing but write, you know, what they consider funny stuff, I guess. But anyway, you've got people that can do research.
Right.
So if you're going to go pop it off about some, wouldn't you have one of your people in your research department, you go, hey, what's the standard protocol? What do we do? You know, mm-hmm. have we ever fed these people before? And of course, I'd be concerned, like, hey, did Obama do it?
Well.
And apparently there are pictures of Michelle being, a part of it, serving
yep.
the stuff. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. That has been, kind of a tradition, if you will.
You're wanting consistency, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. And these talking heads, I mean, these are people that make a tremendous amount of money, and they have people that work for them. They have researchers. Why couldn't they? I think a lot of times they don't want to know, because the opportunity to take a little jab, a little stab at anything uh-huh. Trumpian,
yep.
they want the jab, they want the stab. They don't care if later on it turns out that they were complete idiots. They don't care. In other words, they yeah. scored their point, and to right. them it was worth it. They don't care because, you know, they don't have any real credibility. So it's not like, yeah, I should have looked into that before I said it. I don't want, you know, my credibility to be questioned. But they don't have credibility, so they don't care. That's like a sense of principle and character and things like that. Well, they don't have that anyway. That the kind of things that holds the average person accountable, personally accountable to themselves. They don't have any sense of that. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting Amazing. That they tried to make a big brouhaha over that. And it's like, yeah, we have a KC-135 that went down in Iraq. And we have at least 4 crew members that are dead.
Right. But they're worried about what somebody else had for dinner before they got deployed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.